Please listen carefully.
You are listening to the Ardent Development Podcast. I'm Ron Smith.
And I'm Derek Hatchard. Whatever your role in the software development industry, join us in our search for inspiration and insights for builders and leaders.
Go to ardentdev.com to find more interviews and subscribe by email. Follow us on Twitter at ardentdev.
Welcome to the Ardent Development Podcast. I'm Derek. And today, Ron and I are on with Kevin Grosniklost. Did I say that right, Kevin?
You did. Just good enough.
All right. Good enough. Kevin is an old school developer who lives in St. Louis, Missouri, say it the right way, and runs a great team of seven developers at his company, Architect Now. At Architect Now, they build apps targeting a variety of platforms ranging from web to desktop to mobile. When not building apps, Kevin can be found traveling, chicken picking on his Telecaster, or tracking his expanding amount of gray hairs thanks to his three teenage daughters, and he's still holding it for a second season of Firefly. I'm right there with you. For those of us who are in Canada, which is where Ron and I are, you might need to explain what chicken picking is.
Oh, I'm a country guitar player, so American country music, old school country music. I'm a Merle Haggard, Johnny Cash type guitar player. So I've been doing it a long time.
All right. So Kevin, I saw a blog post that you wrote. It really resonated with me. You were going back, looking at sort of how you got into programming, stuff that you used to work on. And I think it all sprung from building a bit of a museum in your new office. You want to give us a little bit of the backstory for that blog post?
Sure. As you said, it was thanks to the power of eBay. I was putting some technology in a new office we had built and buying some things that I had owned, a few old, my original Nintendo and an original GameCube and some things like that my wife wanted me to get out of the house. So I decided these would be a clever thing to put on a shelf at the office and talk about and share with some of my younger developers, you know, the things that I grew up playing or enjoyed back in the day. And they'll get a little more use than they are sitting in boxes in my basement. In doing that, it got me thinking about, you know, growing up back in the mid 80s when I started programming, I was 12 years old. My parents bought me an Apple II GS and I have been a programmer ever since the day I got that computer. So I went on eBay and said, I kind of wish I still had that computer. And I found one and I ordered one, and ultimately I had to order two and piecemeal a few together that worked. And in doing so, I went down into my basement and dug up, you know, a dusty old box of floppy disks, 5 5 1/4 and 3.5 inch disks, popped them in, and it worked, all my old programs. And that the blog post that you're talking about was really me looking back at, you know, when I was 12, I was in the middle of Nebraska. And that's a time and a place where not a lot of people had computers. There were no, you know, we were still using rotary phones, and there was no internet in the sense that we have it today. And I, as of this recording, I'm a whopping 42 years of age. Some people consider that young. Some people consider that old. I'm kind of in that middle age, but at 12 years old, I got a computer, and that computer booted to a blinking cursor. It literally did nothing. It shocked me. I was excited. I was the proud new owner of a shiny new computer, and I turned it on and up came a cursor. It did absolutely nothing. I dug through the boxes of manuals. I said, it's got to be more than this. It's got to, you know, I was expecting video games and all this fancy stuff to come out of it. And ultimately, I had to learn to make it do it, make that computer do something on my own. And I found a book that I treasure very much back at my house. I have a book called Learning to Program in AppleSoft Basics. So in those days, you were, you know, when you got computers, the availability of software and entertainment was limited. The number of other people that knew how to make them do something was limited. So I wrote a program within the first hour, just reading this book, just starting at the top and saying, hey, I must type line 10, print hello world. I don't think hello world had become a thing back then. I can't remember what I printed, but when something came out, I was hooked. I loved that computer, and fortunately got another one. And oddly enough, all of my floppy disks, those original programs I wrote that day 30 years ago, still booted and were still there. All my old comments, all my old code in BASIC, in C, in Pascal, in assembly language. So I spent the last month or so kind of reminiscing and going back and looking at what I learned and realizing that ever since that day, my entire career and everything I've done has been based on that book, and really growing from there.
It's really cool. So you wrote comments when you were 12 years old. That's impressive.
I did. I spent time trying to, this was before, you know, Google and books. And back then the overall surface area of technology was very small. I had no peers or mentors to teach me to organize your code. It was just something that I, as a young guy, decided made my life a lot easier. So I evolved into it. Over the years, obviously, best practices arose and I read books and, you know, went to college for it and did other things where, but it was amazing to see in 88 and 89, me organizing a group of subroutines in a non object-oriented language and trying to do it a little more cleanly than I did before.
So Kevin, you are really taking me back. My first computer was a Commodore 64. And I can remember being down in the basement with my brother and sister, and we would put in that game into the floppy disk, and it would felt like it would take 10 minutes to load a game, and we'd be off getting the old hot chocolate. What do some of your new staff that hadn't seen that before say when you show them some of these devices? What are some of their reactions?
Well, their first reaction was to the sound. It was a comforting sound to me, but it sounds horrendous when you stick a disk in. I mean, it would, you know, we're talking a world of solid state drives and USB drives that hold 256 gigs and all the great technology we have today on our phone. And here, this big computer has moving parts and it grinds and it buzzes and finally it boots. But, and then it boots and boots and boots and the sound, you know, instant gratification, it was not. It took a while to do about anything. The computer I had at the time, the Apple IIgs, was a whopping 1 megahertz. And, you could get it up to, you know, 2 if you, you know, ran in certain modes. So it definitely is a different world than what we're just used to on our phones. And the guys in my office are younger guys there. I've got some guys that are 23, 24, 25 years old. So definitely they grew up in a time where this stuff was, I might've been showing a punch cards and they'd have been just as excited. They had no idea what a floppy disk was. Never seen one before, let alone someone popped into a computer.
That's hilarious.
And back then, I mean, computers, and you guys know this as well as I do. The people that grew up in that era and use that level of technology, if you were, you know, of the mind to program and write your own software, you were by nature a hardware guy and a software guy. You had to know a little about both. Mm-hmm. You couldn't just focus on one. And today everything's so specialized and every developer's, you know, you work in this vertical or this niche and you know a lot about the front end, but not the back end. Or people just don't build computers today. There's a certain subset that do, and that's very cool to see and how far they've pushed it. But for the most part, you know, sadly, a lot of our youth just get phones and play games and think that Minecraft is the greatest thing in the world, but no one ever puts thought into how it was written. And when I grew up, I wanted to know how it was written.
On your blog post, you have a picture of Magic Quest.
I wrote a ton of games.
And these great big block letters. I love it.
Yeah, because the resolution of that, it was like 40 pixels. And then when I say pixels, they were blocks. It was 40 blocks by 30 blocks or something. So I learned to animate, pick these big, you know, colored blocks that you could pick, I forget, 32 colors or something like that. And the colors had names. And I studied a lot of how to animate them. About a year before I got my computer, I got a Nintendo, the old original NES, and, you know, Mario and Zelda and things of that nature. So I was fascinated. I'm like, this is the greatest thing. And I wanted to learn how to do that. So when I got the computer and programmed, I thought, well, I think these two things must go together. Whoever made that game must be writing software like this. And I didn't know how they did it, but I knew that, hey, if I could put a dot on a screen, that's, you know, a baby step in the right direction. Then I could put two dots. And then I could put, you know, I wrote, oh, dozens of games in my youth. Some never made it beyond the splash screen. I just wrote, me and my buddies would create these great names and ideas and designs and a splash screen bragging about what we did. But we never actually got too far into the game itself.
Well, your blog post made me remember my history a little bit because I did a little bit of that. You know, we would be drawing a couple pixels on the screen or the pirate ship or whatever in BASIC. But my story is that really I got serious about computer science in that first year of university. And in fact, I took computer science as a filler course. I thought I was a science guy. I was getting in all the sciences. And then I got into this computer science as a course, and I was hooked, you know, the problem solving and the figuring it out. But your blog post made me really wonder about, you know, everybody's got that different story, right? You were quite young and mesmerized by these early computers and started programming and the like. For me, it was when I got serious about it when I hit university, and it was almost by accident.
One of the key thoughts I had looking back is everybody, even my coworkers, my peers, I travel a lot. I speak at a lot of conferences. You know, fortunately with Microsoft as an MVP, I know a lot of great people through that organization. And, you know, we sit around a lot and talk about, hey, how'd you get started? And everybody has very similar stories. There's that point where you realize this is what I want to do. And that's a key thing today. I think there's a lot of us that organically fell into it. But, you know, I'm a father of three daughters. And, you know, when I was, you know, a young dad, I was thinking my kids are just inherently going to grow up and see all the technology and see what I do. And they're going to evolve that way. And they're going to be great coders. That didn't turn out, you know, that they all have their own career paths and two are in college out of state now. And none of them for software development. But, you know, as I see their friends and kids, I don't see enough kids, at least in my peripheral, that are, 17, 18 year olds that come over that say, hey, I want to be a coder. I'm going to college for computer science. There is that ecosystem, but not to the extent that, man, if I was that age today and I saw all the great technology that's out there with virtual reality. And I mean, technology is fascinating today. The capabilities, all the cloud and just ubiquitous processing power and what we can do in terms of just software engineering. You don't see kids gravitating towards that in the numbers that I kind of wish they were. And I look back to me as a 12-year-old and I was impressed by the fact that I can write a basic program and print some characters to the screen. If I'd have had an iPhone, I couldn't imagine where the world would have taken me.
My kids are not as old as your kids, Kevin, but I've been surprised that, you know, given that they see, you know, the work that I've done over the years, and maybe that's the problem, that dad's work is just too boring from their perspective. But, you know, I've taken them to Learn to Code events. I've taught them little bits of Python, and they've done tons of Minecraft. My son was interested in building a Minecraft plugin extension. I can't remember what they call them now. And you know, he lasted maybe an hour with Java. And then he said, yeah, I'm not that interested in it anymore. and off he went. It's an interesting, almost cultural change where those of us who got into it when we were younger. So I was probably a similar to age to you. My first computer was a VIC-20 and I wrote some basic on that. And then when I got to high school, I wrote, learned some Pascal. I was telling Ron earlier that I wrote a blackjack game. I'm sure the randomizer in it would not live up to anybody's expectations today. But, you know, our world is so technologically hinged today. You know, everyone has a supercomputer in their pocket. But really, in many ways, our culture is very consumer oriented in that we want to use what the technology gives us. We're not necessarily very invested in trying to dig in and figure out how to really make that technology do things that it doesn't do already, which is, you know, with the games that you wrote on your Apple II, you were really taking a piece of clay and shaping it into what you wanted it to be. And, you know, I wonder if in some way the seals in all of our devices are sort of teaching us that these are things that we don't go and tamper with. Yeah. It's almost the maker, you know, it's the maker culture on, you know, in 3D printing, for example, where we're seeing the people who would have been interested in programming when we were young are now gravitating to that space.
I am fascinated by the maker culture. And I think there is that subset of people that are curious and builders. I'm a huge Raspberry Pi guy. I mean, in the midst of all this great technology I do at work, and we make iPhones and tablets do these great things, and we work for billion-dollar companies, and we build, you know, we're in Angular and in React and building really high-end websites that scale to, you know, tens of thousands of concurrent people. When I go home, I'm still just as curious and passionate about it as I was when I was 12. This Sunday morning, yesterday morning, or 2 days ago, I guess now, I got up and actually had some packages from Amazon in the mail. My wife thought they were Christmas presents for somebody, so she didn't open them. Really, it was just me. I ordered a 7-inch touchscreen for my Raspberry Pi, and I strapped the Raspberry Pi to the back of this touchscreen, and I had a RetroPie SD card, and I booted a complete NES emulator, and I could sit in my kitchen table with a battery and play this little rig with all these wires. And my daughters are home for Christmas break from college, and they're like, Dad, what are you doing? I'm there with an old retro Nintendo controller on a 7-inch screen with wires sticking out everywhere. And I was really proud of it. I mean, I assembled it. I won't say I built it from scratch, but I put it together and I got it all running. And they're like, this is what you do on your day off, as you sit around and this is what you ordered from Amazon. I'm like, yes, I'm just as excited about doing this today. And along those lines, I was at a conference a couple months back, and we were having a discussion similar to this. And one of the fellow speakers and a friend of mine, he had the great quote. We were talking about what we look for in developers. And it's that passion and curiosity just for learning about anything technology related and loving it. And he told the group, he said, pound for pound, I always try to be the most curious guy in the room. That resonated with me. I thought,
That's a great quote.
Yeah, I know. I thought, that's the team that I want. That's the team that I hire. I don't care what you can code. I can teach you to code. I want you to really love this stuff. I want you to look at those old things and think, why did somebody make that decision? Why was it built like that? I think that is lost somewhat. We live in a culture of Big Bang Theory, and Hollywood has all these hacker movies and, you know, these games. And I mean, the day I got my Apple IIgs, the new one just off eBay, I plugged it in and got those old apps running. At the same time, one of my daughters had just gotten Battlefront 2, the new Star Wars game. So she's playing on a big screen Battlefront 2 with all the amazing graphics. And I was in awe of this game. I'm like, wow, this really looks good. I mean,
yeah, you want to say, hey, kids, come over here. Take a look. Look how cool this is.
Yeah. I've got nice Dr. Dinner. Mario over here. Dr. Mario, come on.
No, and I showed her Magic Quest with, you know, 40 pixels by 30 pixels, and they're big, and they're like five colors that I made when I was 12. And she was less than blown away because she's like, I got to get back to Battlefront, you know, save the Empire. Because I think you start out as the Empire in that game. But no, it's just people always say, if you could go back in time, what would you show people? I'd show them video games. Could you imagine what somebody 100 years ago would think if you showed them Battlefront on a big screen?
Oh,
we carry this stuff around on phones.
You made a comment on, I think, on your blog about the surreal experience of using your iPhone to photograph an old Apple computer and you know, the 1,000 times difference in processing power of that little phone compared to your old computer. And that's, you know, imagine if you pulled a smartphone out of your pocket anytime before the last 10 years, I mean, that would just be magic. 100 years ago, that would be, okay. Yeah, they might lock you up for you know, your dark arts. Kevin, I wanted to get your point of view on sort of what different types of developers, what they need to think about and what they can do to make themselves better as in regards to understanding the history. So we get very nostalgic about all of these things. We all learned to program a long time ago. There are kids coming into the industry today. You said you've got people of various ages who work for you. I'm sure you work with clients of all ages and all backgrounds. Curious your point of view on the nuggets. What are the little things that, hey, it's important that even if you didn't work, you know, even if you didn't write BASIC on a Commodore VIC-20, it's important that you have these pieces of connective tissue to the past because they influence the way that you do things today.
I mean, I think curiosity and passion are probably the two biggest things. If you have those, I can teach you anything else. When I got started, though, like I said, the surface area was much smaller, that, you know, that you weren't inundated with best practices. There was one way to do things, and the whole industry agreed on that. Today, thanks to Google, Stack Overflow, the Plural sites of the world, you can get, you know, 100,000 different opinions on what frame. There's a new JavaScript library. There's been 10 of them released just since we've been on this call. So, and everybody says they're the best and you should use them and they're the most scalable. And I think a lot of software development just comes back to common sense and trying not to be too fancy. And the younger guys that got working for me are some of the best pure developers I've ever met in my life. I'm blown away by the skills that they have. And they have very little, you know, detriment to anything they do except for just lack of years of experience. They haven't had the opportunity to talk to as many customers or see as many products as we have. And sometimes it is just common sense. Like, why should this be required and why shouldn't this? It's not that as developers, they couldn't make it work either way. But sometimes those forks in the road come up and you got to make a decision, you know, without going back to the customer for everything. But if you're passionate and you're reading about it and you're keeping up, I'm proud of the technologies my company uses today, but they're going to change next year. They're going to change in 6 months. We're going to have to learn something new. And that's just the way it is. We, unfortunately, regardless of your age, technology, the ball is rolling downhill faster than it ever has. So you've got a race to keep up. It didn't move that fast back in the day. I learned BASIC and literally that way, and C and Pascal, and those were top languages for decades. Now they're relegated to the annals of history. And we've moved on and it's all JavaScript and TypeScript and C# and Java and a whole bunch of other things. And they change frequently. If you want a stable career that doesn't change much, become a math teacher. They're still teaching pretty much the same core concepts that they have for a century or two. In terms of computers, it changes. So just because you're the expert C# programmer really means little in my mind. I want a guy that's curious.
Okay, we had a little bit of an audio malfunction right at the end of our conversation with Kevin there. So it did cut off a little bit abruptly, but it was a great conversation. Ron, are you feeling as nostalgic as I am right now?
Oh, man. I'm thinking about that old Commodore 64 and the games. And even when he talked about, you know, the sounds the computer used to make, and I can picture them again. You know, you put the disc in and do that rant, rant, rant. It was just taking me back. Oh, man, oh, man.
Did you have discs for your Commodore 64, or did you have tape drive, or did you have both? Do you remember?
Discs, I think.
Discs, yeah. We had a VIC-20, which I think you could get a tape drive for that. So thank you one more time to Kevin. You can find him on Twitter. He's at KVGROS, at KVGROS, I guess you'd say that. And his website's architectnow.net. If you go to architectnow.net/blog, you can find the post from November 2017, where he writes about AppleSoft Basic and the little museum that he created in his office. He's got a bunch of pictures and screen captures of all of the games that he created when he was 12 years old. It's pretty fun to go down memory lane there. So I encourage everyone to visit architectnow.net/blog. All right, that's it.
Thanks, Kevin. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Ardent Development Podcast. Be sure to visit us at ardentdev.com for the show notes, including links to the books and resources mentioned. And don't forget to sign up for email notifications so that you're the first to know about new episodes. You can also follow us on Twitter at ardentdev. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review on iTunes, as it helps other people discover the podcast. Thanks for listening.